You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Garth, good evening to you. It's Richie here in the commentary box for episode Choo 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 of the Dice Men Cometh.
Hello, Richie, what's up?
Well, Garth, or should I say Bill, we're here for episode Choo 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 of the Dice Men Cometh this evening.
Well, that's absolutely marvellous.
And I don't know how long I can keep this up for, Richie, but I'll certainly give it a try. I'm sure Hobart's sick of it by now.
Why don't you call me Richie? I'm Bill.
Ah, Bill.
And who we've got here?
Oh, hello, yes, I'm... No, I can't do Tony.
No, me either, but look, you're here. It is episode 222 of the Dice Men Cometh, as we did say. And I'm Mark.
I'm Garth. And Leon, you're not here this week, so it's just Mark and Garth.
And Garth, we've got a lot happening on episode 222, haven't we?
We sure do. We are going to start in the dastardly world of crime and crime prevention.
Ooh.
In a little two-player card game that I have just recently introduced to you and your partner.
You have, and we have loved it.
We will then switch on to all the fairness and funness and funness and fairness in the fair or unfair world of unfair, and more importantly, expansions that go along with that, which tie in very nicely to you saying everything that there is about Kickstarter.
That's right.
But before we do that, how about we quickly throw to a song? But before that, we say thanks to Area 52 for being our long-term sponsor.
Thank you so much, Area 52. They've got all the things. You know what they don't have, Garth?
Cricket memorabilia.
No, they don't have barcodes on the side of their warships like the Swedish do.
Oh, really?
Do you know why Swedish have barcodes on the side of their warships?
If I was Trent, I would say yes and ruin your joke, but he's dead to us, so I'm going to say no. Why do those ships have barcodes on the side of them?
To Scandinavian.
Hey!
Thanks so much, Area 52. We'll be back after this with more.
Hi, this is Matthew Dunstan, and you're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, the best podcast in Australian board gaming.
Woohoo! There we go. That was Matt Dunstan, who I interviewed recently, and I'll be putting up that interview soon. But before that was the Foo Fighters with Hell here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We are the Dice Men Cometh. We talk about tabletop games, so your board games, card games, role-playing games, sometimes miniatures games, sometimes all sorts of other things.
That sounds about it, right? That's what we do.
Yeah, and tonight we are going to talk about a game, Garth, that you got from Kickstarter.
I did. I spent my own money on this game, but only because I liked the theme, liked the game, liked the designer.
Yeah, now, this is a game by Tim Fowers.
Correct.
With art by Ryan Goldsberry. Now, I'd say they're a dream team that's right up there, perhaps, with Vitalini and O'Toole.
Oh, he said it.
Because, look, here's the litany of hits. So, Wokstar, which was pretty quiet when it came out on Kickstarter, but only because it was quite a small print run.
Yeah, I have that. Haven't opened it.
Yep. Then there was Paperback.
Yep.
Which is a great deck-building game where you are using letters to make words and get scoring. Then after that, they had Burgle Brothers, the heist game, where you're cooperatively pulling off a heist in various locations. It's a fantastic game. After that, then they had Hardback, which is sort of like a twist on Paperback, but different. I have that one and I absolutely love it. My partner and I play that all the time.
Just came out on app as well.
Then there was The Fugitive, which we're going to talk about. Then there's Now Boarding, a neat little, again, co-op game.
Fully co-op, time-limiting, running airlines throughout continental USA.
Yeah, and then, and we'll talk a little bit later on in my Kickstarter update, he's got another new game on there called Sabotage, and I'll talk about that one later.
Sure does. Busy boy, eh?
But Garth, The Fugitive.
Yes.
Are you going to search every outhouse, doghouse, birdhouse, henhouse?
Well, no, I can't.
House.
Because it comes in such a neat little box that I don't have to. Now, one of your Kickstarters from years gone by, Mark, when you mentioned that lovely game Exploding Kittens.
Yes.
And then when you did your your wonderful presentation at your PAX panel.
Oh, yeah, the tabletop, great tabletop debate.
Correct, where you presented and showed the whole auditorium the Exploding Kittens box.
The highlight of the Exploding Kittens Kickstarter
highlight of the
campaign.
Game, arguably. Yep. Well, Fugitive has the very same box, albeit with one or two less meows in it, because this little box, which is the size of a paperback book, I guess, really, mm-hmm. is the magnetically sealed version, but it looks like a suitcase. And it is absolutely thematically appropriate
yes.
because, yes, we are talking about Fugitive by Tim Fowers with the art by Ryan Goldsberry. And we'll get to the art in a little bit because, Mark, I'm sure you might want to talk about that. So, look, it's set in the same universe as Burgle Brothers,
yes.
which was, for me, probably my first introduction to how good a designer Tim Fowers is, because as far as a co-op heist game, Burgle Brothers is probably head and shoulders above a lot of them for a lot of players. Looks great on the table, simple to play, simple to teach, and looks pretty good when you're playing it as well.
Yeah.
Now, this game, The Fugitive, takes place chronologically once you've got the loot. Now, it scales down because it's only a two-player game. You have one player who is playing The Fugitive, and all he wants to do, he or she, get out.
Flee.
Make your way to, I think, a seaplane or a plane at the end of it and fly away to God knows where.
Yeah.
And the other player is playing the Marshal, the Tommy Lee Jones in this particular story.
Mm-hmm.
And you are trying to go to all of those places that you mentioned before to root out the fugitive and, more importantly, get rid of all their hidey holes where they could be hiding,
yes.
their hiding places. And, look, as far as the game goes, it's incredibly simple. It's made up of couple of decks of cards. The cards are numbered 1 through to 43, and let's just get it out of the way first of all. Each of them has unique art, and when you put the cards down from, starts at 0, from 0 all the way to 43.
42, meaning of life.
It tells you a pictorial story about the escape.
Yes, and look, I know we said we'd get to the art later, but just my partner Sarah distracted in the middle of the game and kept having to look back at the cards and check the numbers because she was totally distracted by the beautiful art and the story it was telling.
Yes.
How, you know, one particular time they came so close and then, you know, they were split again and then they were in a disco and, oh.
And that's
it. You just got to see it to believe it.
As soon as you buy this game, after you unpack it, which takes about 30 seconds, you will probably just want to play all the cards face down in a row so that you can experience that. So Ryan's done an absolutely brilliant job with this artwork. The style is fantastic. And obviously being in the same universe as Burgle Brothers and looking is Sabotage
yes,
in the same universe as well. So there you go. Obviously they've got a bit of a theme going on. So anyway, looks great. Really compact. The game comes with cards, comes with a dry erase marker,
yes.
which is incredibly important because it also comes with a little laminated sheet which has numbers,
little checkboard.
Yeah, numbers 1 through to 42 on it, which is very, very important for the Marshal, I think you'll agree.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it, except you have these stack of cards which are numbered 4 through to 41 that are the important ones.
Yes.
And the reason for that is that the fugitive will start with a starting hand. They will start with cards 1, 2, 3 and 42.
Yep.
Card 0 is starting on the table because mm-hmm. that's the scene of the crime, I guess. And then there are going to be three piles. Piles of cards numbered 4 to 14, 15 to 28,
yep.
and then 29 through to 41.
Yes.
So they're the three piles. They will be shuffled up so that you don't know the order of them, but they'll always be in those same three starting piles. Now, that's important because the whole point of this game is for the fugitive to make their way from card 0 all the way through to card 42 and escape and jump on their jet plane. It's the job of the Marshal to clearly stop that from happening, but it doesn't really matter how quickly that happens as long as, at the end of the game, the Marshal has revealed all of the fugitive's cards.
Yes.
Now, how does that work? Very, very simply. Because on the starting turn, the very first turn of the game, the fugitive will have their starting hand, which is the 1, 2, 3 and 42. They'll then have an initial, you've got to draw a couple of cards from one deck and a couple of cards from one and one from another, so that there's always a bit of variability. Marshall starts with 0. And then on the fugitive's turn, they're going to place a couple of face-down cards. Now, they, every time you place a face-down card, signify a hideout. And as I say, the marshal's job is to reveal all of those, which we'll get to in a moment. Now, there's only one rule that the fugitive has to obey when placing hideouts, and that simply is that you cannot place a card that is more than three higher than the previous hideout that you've played. Yep. So if I play a hideout number one, I can play a two, a three, or a four hideout, and that's it.
Yes.
The only wrinkle in this is that you've got sprints that you can use. Now, every single card in the deck has a footprint in the top right corner, for example, one or two of those.
Yeah.
They signify sprints. Now, you can choose to play a hideout and attach a sprint card to it, which is also face down. And for every footprint on that card, which the fugitive will know, but yes, the marshal won't, you can add one to that. So if, as the fugitive, I play the card that is already three away from the previous face down one, but I also then play a face down sprint card that has two footprints on it, I can now be playing a hideout that is five away from the previous one. Doesn't mean I have to be five away, because I'm a fugitive, I'm a criminal, I could be a little bit sneaky.
Tricky, bluffy.
I could have played a hideout number three, and I'm just playing hideout number four right next to it, but I'm putting a sprint there to try and throw this marshal off the scent. And that's really the game. The game is all about this bluff, double bluff, where everyone has a bit of information, because, you know, the fugitive's turn will always, apart from the initial turn, start with drawing a card from a pile and then choosing to play a hideout.
Or two.
You can choose not to if you don't want to.
Yes.
Whereas the marshal's turn, they will always draw a card from one of the three piles that they want to.
Yeah.
And really, once they've drawn the card and taken a look at it, the only purpose that card serves is on their little checkbox where they cross it off the list, because they know that the fugitive doesn't have access that card.
That's not going to be a hideout.
So they just throw it away. They just keep it face down so that the fugitive doesn't know the number that they've got.
Yes.
But then the marshal's turn is very simply they can guess either one or a couple, or try and guess all of the hideout cards that the fugitive has got face down.
Mm.
Now, that's the game.
It is.
As the marshal, I might draw a card, see that it's number 13, and then the fugitive's got three cards face down, but I don't want to go, I think you've got cards 4 and 7 and 10 down. You might just say, I think one of those is 9. And if it's right, the fugitive has to reveal it. Plus, they have to reveal any sprint cards that are associated with that, which is also very, very important. And the game will just go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And it sounds really simple because it is very simple.
Yes.
But it's also quite tricky. And what makes it really tricky is those three stacks of cards. Because every time the fugitive is drawing from a certain pile, that in itself is giving information to the marshal. Because the marshal will know, well, they've just drawn one card from the 4 to 14 stack, so they're probably still pretty close to home. Or they're drawing cards from the 29 to 41 stack, so, oh, Jesus, they're getting a bit close to escaping here. I better ramp up my efforts. But the fugitive could be double bluffing, and they could be somewhere in the middle, and they're drawing a card from the early stack purely to use it for the sprint value. And that's where there's so much tension about this very, very short game, because it only goes for 10 or 15 minutes.
That's right. It is a beautiful mix of bluffing, of elimination, because of the fact that, you know, as the marshal, you know some of the cards and you're crossing them off as you go.
Yep.
And then the hidden movement in terms of, well, there's no sprint card, so you must be within three, or there is a sprint card, so you could be maybe one or two, because what I discovered, I didn't realise, is with the sprint footprints, odd-numbered cards have one, even-numbered cards have two. So that then helped me, okay, well, if I know that there's only, you know, player X has got three cards in their hand, and I think that two of them, because I can see what I've crossed off, I think that two of them are even.
Yep.
They can only sort of sprint two, not one. All these little bits of information coming together, but you will never have a perfect set of information because you just can't get enough, see enough cards.
Correct.
To do that. So you're sort of whittling away, uncovering, you know, maybe one, maybe if you're really lucky, two in a go, trying to just keep up with the fugitive. And then, I don't know about you, but what happened in both of the cases of the games that Sarah and I played, we had to do the manhunt.
The manhunt. And the manhunt is basically the final chance for the marshal to get their baddie. And this is where
the fugitive has already played card 42. Yeah. They're on the plane. They're ready to go. And you have laid that final trap and you're just doing all or nothing. The marshal is trying to reveal every single card that is still face down. And if they do it, they win. If they get one wrong, then they don't win. And the fugitive flees and spends all their money living a life of luxury.
Yeah. And look, it's beautiful in its art, but it's also beautiful in its simplicity.
Yes.
In that there's so little to it, and yet thinky, puzzly, head-hurdy way, you know, you're really like, oh, but that could be a five, but then if they're bluffing, that could be three away, or it could be seven away, but I know that they've only been drawing from that deck. And I found myself in a situation as the fugitive where I played my cards and I was sort of sprinting a bit to try and get out ahead. But then I had the situation where I didn't have any cards that fitted the criteria of, I think the closest card I had to the last hideout was like about 10 away.
Wow.
And I didn't have anywhere near enough sprints to play it. So I had to actually pass and hope that at least there'd be one hideout left for me to have another turn and that I'd draw a card that would fit in that gap. So it's not like it's everything's in the fugitive's court and the marshal is already pushing it uphill.
No.
It's very well balanced.
It sure is, and it's a credit because this game is quick and it's simple, but, geez, it just gives you a really good tense experience for those 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And, look, I've played it quite a few times. I reckon it's pretty well balanced as well. I think I've won probably as many as the marshal as I have of the fugitive. Now, the first game, especially as the marshal, will probably be a little bit trickier to figure out the level of information that you have and don't have. And every single player I've ever seen when they play the marshal will figure out their own little way to use the, the little scribble pad to go, well, I 100% know that it's this number, so that's that symbol, and I have a feeling they've got this number, so I'm going to just put a different symbol to say, well, I think it's that one, and I'm going to cross this one out because that's the one I know that I've got. So it ends up being this little work of art that each individual marshal figures out. It's a really fun game.
Yeah.
This game, I can't even remember how much I paid for it on Kickstarter, but it wasn't a lot.
Was it? Maybe like $30 or $35?
If that. I know it's out there in Australian retailers. I have seen it at our local friendly shop, Area 52, and I highly recommend it.
Yeah, well, for me, you know, because you've got the choice of you can pick, as the marshal, you can go try to find one hideout, and it does, if there's three or four hideouts out you don't know yet, if it's any one of those, you'll reveal it.
Yep.
But if you want to guess more than one, you have to guess, so say I guess two, I have to have both of them right.
Correct.
And if I've got one of them right and one of them wrong, the fugitive doesn't reveal either. So then you've got the possibility of, well, I'm sure that one of those cards is card 21, but because I got the second one wrong, I don't know. And look, we had a ball with it. I'd like to play it against you, Garth, because you're a sneaky bastard. But yeah, look, this could be in everyone's collection, I think. Look, it's only two-player, so that's the limitation there, I guess.
But the good thing about this, and for me personally, I don't like necessarily playing long two-player games. So something like this, where it's over and done within 15, 20 minutes, where you reset it within 30 seconds and go again, it just fits that really nice sweet spot.
Yeah, and you can even, I mean, we played two where we swapped sides for the second one, and still played it in less than half an hour.
Yeah. Now, the only other thing it does have, which is always optional, is you can put sort of seed the decks with event cards, and when an event card is revealed instead of a numbered card, you can draw from a deck, and it might alter the rules a little bit. Now, it's great that they're in there because it offers some variability, but my personal feeling is this game is designed to be a two-player bluff and double bluff battle between the two. It is criminal versus the law enforcement. And I don't think it needs those weird sort of variabilities in it. I think the simplicity of the game is good enough. So I've got them in there and they'll stay in there and they might get used from time to time. But
you haven't ever used them?
Only once. And it's fine, but I think it's like one of those expansions that doesn't really add to it. I think the pure game is all I want.
Yeah, and in a game where there's so much deduction and problem solving, and you're really trying to read the mind of the other person, plus combine that with information you know about the cards, you don't really want any extra chaos in that.
No, you don't. So I would personally, I'd give them a go, but for me, stick with the vanilla game such as it is. So look, I really, really enjoyed it. I'm curious to see what Sabotage is like when you tell us about that, Mark. But on that note, let's go to a song. Well, there you go. That continues to be the last few seconds of Elvis Costello with Honey, Are You Straight or Are You Blind? And Mark, I asked the same question of you. But look, you're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Can I be neither, Garth?
Of course you can.
Or both?
You're allowed to be whatever. In board gaming, you can be whoever you are, want to be, identify as, or in between.
Awesome. And thank you so much to Area 52. As you said, they do have copies of The Fugitive there, which would be a great buy. They've also got your comics, your role-playing supplements, and of course, what game shop would be complete without Magic, Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon, all TCG World,
yes,
whatever they are.
And it's almost Father's Day. Father's Day is in September, isn't it, down here? So you should be probably getting Indian presents early.
Well, someone at my work even told me they went in the other day and bought a 20,000-piece jigsaw.
Wowzers.
From Area 52. Got a fabulous selection of jigsaws.
Lovely. Cool. So
it's too many things to mention, Garth.
Yes. So on that note, we're going to switch from being hardened criminals or protectors of law enforcement to being bastards to each other in a very different way, which is the highly competitive world of funfair construction. But it's not funfair, it is unfair.
Absolutely.
Now, we did talk briefly about this game, I think in your research you say November 2016?
Yes, that's right. I think it was something like episode 161 about that era.
It was actually episode 142, lads. I can't even take a week off sick without having to interject. For God's sake, get it right. I'm going back to bed. Hello, everybody. Night, night. Ugh.
So for anyone who's really interested, go back and listen to that where we do a full what we've been playing of Unfair.
Yeah, and I think
this
we
is the
actually,
snapshot of it.
As I say, I think we actually spoke to designer Joel Finch at PAX.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps just before it came out, and then it came out, Leon had got a copy, we played it, we reviewed it, we loved it.
Yep.
It's been one of our favourites for quite some time, and we were very excited to, well, I was very excited to see Joel Finch, and you heard from Kim Brayback from Good Games Publishing last week in my LFG interviews to see the first expansion coming out.
I know.
And they've got four new theme decks.
But before we get to that...
Oh, yes.
Because, you know, maybe not everyone listened to episode 161 in November 2016. If you haven't, shame on you. Well, not shame, that's fine. So Unfair, by Australian designer Joel Finch, is a 2-to-5-player tableau-building game
definitely.
Where you are running competing fun parks. Now, the game itself is, you know, pretty simple. You'll have events and you'll use money to draw cards and you'll use those cards to build up various attractions within your fun park. But part of the really nice attraction to the base game is that it comes with half a dozen themed decks.
Yeah.
Which means that in a 2-to-5-player game, there's a heap of potential variability. So there is a pirate deck, a robot deck, a vampire deck, a jungle deck, a ninja deck, and a gangster deck. And the way it starts is each player is just going to choose one of the themes. You'll then mush up all of the cards into their respective pile. So there'll be a city event deck, a city deck, an event deck, blueprints deck, blah, 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 from each of the themes.
Yeah.
And that forms the basis of your game on your tableau. Now, what I immediately love about this is the board. The board looks great.
Yes.
And in a really simple yet clever design choice, it's a double-sided board, which I immediately love. But the board is configured for either having everyone sitting essentially around the same side of the table, or if you flip it over, it's designed for people sitting across from each other on the table, which is just simple.
I never knew that because I'd only ever played with one side of the board, if you like, the normal side where everything faces the same way.
Yeah.
And then this was at the pub
last weekend. Last
Thursday. You put the board down and I was like, does the expansion have a special board? I've never seen that board before. What's going on? And then you flip it over and you show me it's the backside of the normal board. That is so clever.
Just makes sense.
And look, that is so typical of Joel Finch. He, I don't know how he does it, he seems like the guy who thinks of everything. He's thought so far ahead with this game. There's little Easter eggs hidden in there all over the place.
Correct.
And look, it just plays so well. You know, you are, as you said, you're building up your attractions and you're trying to, you're adding upgrades to your attraction.
Yes.
Adding these extra icons, which at the end of the game, you add up how many icons you got. You consult a table, tells you how many points for each attraction.
Exactly.
And your park is limited by, you can only have a certain number of attractions.
Because it only fits so many guests.
That's right.
Every
you can only have so many guests. But then, you know, like in every good card game, there are rule breakers on the cards.
Oh, yes. So that's the base game. The run of play is an event will happen, which will alter the effects of that round.
Yeah, it's like might a global be good event, or bad. Yeah.
Then there's going to be, you draw, an event card each.
Yeah.
You then have a choice to play that, and that goes round and round and round until everyone chooses to pass. And event cards can either be good for the person playing them or bad for the opponents of the person playing them.
Yeah, well, every event card has two parts.
Exactly.
So the top part is sort of a good part and the bottom part is a not so good part, or a good against everyone else part.
Yes, which is why this is unfair, not funfair.
That's right.
Then you go into the main crux of the game, which is everyone will generally have three actions. An action could be buying a card and placing it into your fun park. It could be just taking a card. It could be using some abilities that you've got. Yeah,
taking a couple of blueprints.
Exactly.
Blueprints being sort of like your ticket cards in Ticket to Ride, where you some end game scoring bonuses you get from certain combinations.
I don't understand that reference. I've never played Ticket to Ride.
There's a huge range of blueprints. You can get extra event cards.
Correct.
You can throw out one of your cards to get a look at five park cards, but then you can only keep one.
Indeed. Yeah. So there's always plenty of things to do, although you never have enough actions.
Yes.
Three actions gets used up very quickly. Second last part is you will then earn your income, depending on the number of guests or stars you have in your park, which is vital because income is incredibly important.
Yes.
And then you do some cleanup, which involves a few steps. Now, we'll now switch to the expansion, which is, as you say, the very first one. Now, this is called the very creatively titled Alien B-Movie Dinosaur Western expansion. Do you want to guess what themes are now in this expansion, Mark?
I reckon there's some B-movies in there.
Yeah, well, we're not talking about the Jerry Seinfeld movie, because I don't think even Joel Finch could create a whole deck of B-movie Jerry Seinfeld cards. And if you can, good luck.
Yes.
So we are talking about your B-style movies.
Yeah.
Now, each of those, again, comes with lots of little in-jokes and lots of Easter eggs.
Yeah.
But I found, compared to the six base decks, they also mix it up a little bit
yes.
more. So, for example, and I'll do this alphabetically because even though you know I can say the alphabet backwards, I'm going to start with A. Aliens, for example, introduce a whole new currency.
Yeah.
So in the cards that you get, you will have cards that you can only purchase with alien currency. Or rather than generating stars, which is guest income, they generate alien currency. And that's really, really cool because at the end of the game, normal money, Earth money,
yep.
is worth $2 equals 1 point.
Yes.
Alien currency is the other way around, where every alien dollar you've got is worth 2 points
yeah.
because alien currency is all powerful.
Yep.
Now, it also comes with a whole bunch of extra cards, and probably one of the more interesting facets is that your staff that you can recruit for your park can be abducted by aliens,
yes.
which can be good because it might give you more alien money, or it could be really, really bad depending on how you use it. Very, very curious. You've then got the B-movie one, which is, you know, a whole bunch of the B-movie themes, and I guess one of this theme's biggest attractions is the panorama nature that it brings to it, where
yeah.
unlike in the normal game where you can basically place your attractions next to each other and
yeah.
it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
These introduce panoramas where, as well as getting bonuses for the number of different icons on each attraction, which is a vertical stack, you can get bonus points for having cards in a particular order left to right, and attractions essentially next to each other, which forms this beautiful panorama of up to five cards.
Yeah, and amazingly, something I didn't realise, some of those base sets had the panoramas, but there was nothing to do with them because that scoring option wasn't unlocked. And
almost
now,
like he planned this.
I
in
know, so clever. When you have the B movie in, it unlocks the panorama scoring. Now, has to be said, it's tricky.
Yep.
But you can leave a space, though you've got to pay extra money to leave a space.
Yeah, pay 3 coins for every space
between
you leave.
Your attractions.
Yep.
But it's just another little twist. Now, speaking of where you locate the attractions, and moving on in the alphabet to D for dinosaurs.
Yes.
Your dinosaurs introduce, funnily enough, dinosaurs.
I know.
And, you know, think of that movie that's out recently and the other 5 or 6 movies that have been out featuring dinosaurs in theme parks.
Correct.
Things tend to go wrong when you have dinosaurs in theme parks.
Well, the thing that makes this interesting is the randomness of it.
Yes.
Now, yes, you are creating some form of Jurassic-style park, yes. Potentially.
Cretaceous park.
You might just be upgrading your gate to be a dinosaur-style gate, or in fact, your gate might even upgrade to an island.
Island, yes.
Don't know where he got the idea for that.
No.
But dinosaurs are tough to look after in your park. Now, the thing that makes them interesting is you can only ever have one dinosaur per attraction, because I don't know if you know, Mark, but they generally aren't friends with other species of dinosaurs, particularly
don't.
If you've got ones with pointy teeth versus, you know, those leaf eaters.
Yes.
But unlike in the base game where the first event in any round is an event card and you draw it, what happens is you now roll for your dinosaurs. So there are two dice. Starting with the first player, they will roll these two dice. And on your dinosaur card in front of you, it'll have a little thing that says, if you roll under a particular number, bad stuff happens.
Yes.
And the bad stuff, not surprisingly, gets worse the more scary the dinosaur is.
And I love that variability of, hey, look, I've got a little baby velociraptor. As long as I roll over 4, I'm safe.
Yeah.
But then T-Rex comes out and it might be 6 or 7, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, and if your velociraptor escapes, well, maybe it just runs off into the bush. But if your T-Rex escapes, not only does it trash the attraction that it's in, but then it runs next door and it eats the dinosaur in the attraction next door or on both sides.
Yeah, and if you're lucky enough to have the T-Rex, as I did, and rolled less than 6, as I did, it shuts down your whole park.
Yes.
Because for some reason, guests just don't want to come to your park anymore. Yes. And that's tough.
But then there's clever little things, Garth. Like electrified fences. You can add an electrified fence to your attraction, which negates the dinosaur. But then, of course, some other mean park owner might use one of those cranky event cards to steal away your electrified fence or switch it off.
Like, randomly, an alien may appear and do a matter transfer and just transfer the dinosaur from one park to another. Don't know who did that, but
Garth,
it was cool.
Garth.
And then the last of these new themes is the Western theme.
Yes.
Now, again, it has elements of panorama to it, but it basically is your Wild West. It's out there. It's just rootin' tootin' good fun.
Yeah, and the clever thing about the panorama with the Wild West is there's no order. So
correct.
With the others, there might be 3 or 4 cards and you'll have the leftmost card, the rightmost card, or whatever. Whereas with the Western theme, all the cards go together because the West just goes on and 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 on. And so you can put them in any order and it all connects together. And then you've got old steam trains and bandits. And, you know, one of the other things you have in your theme park is you have staff as well as attractions. So, for example, you might have a gunslinger as a staff member who can doesn't shoot a laser gun, but, you know, might shoot the staff member of another park that's really annoying to you.
Exactly. And the great thing is you can put all of these themes and mush them together in your attractions.
Yeah.
So you can have a thrill ride, which is your roller coaster, which also has a T-Rex living on premises that has comfy chairs, that is also got a hyperbeam transmitter in the Wild West because it's got a stagecoach.
Yep, and a red carpet with a popcorn stand.
Correct. So you can make the story as wild as you want it to be, but it is just fun. And obviously having 4 more combinations into an already a game that already had half a dozen decks built into it, it just means that replayability value just goes up and up and up and up.
And look, for people who are thinking, oh, but hang on, 10 theme decks I don't think will be enough for me. Well, let's just say Joel Finch has got another 16 letters in the alphabet up his sleeve?
Yes, because he's just done A, B. He'd already done C, I guess, because it was A, B, and D. Well, no, C hasn't
been. No, he's had the P for pirate, the R for open, all the others. And, of course, some people may have seen a little tease of a photo from our good friend Ella Loves Board Games, where she had taken a photo of Joel's master box. Mm. And they may have noticed that there were, in fact, 26 letters in that master box, some that had titles next to them, and some that didn't.
There you go. Well, so, it's a shame that dinosaurs have been used up because there won't be a Dice Man deck, I guess.
Podcasters? No, that's P for Pirates. Yeah. No, robots.
Yeah, we'll have to figure that out.
Tasmanians.
Oh, yeah. Okay, here we go. So, look, anyway, again, Mark, I'm sure you'll mention it, but just briefly, the expansion is currently on Kickstarter, kicking some serious goals.
Yep.
You can buy the expansion, or you can combine the expansion with the base game, which a lot of people are choosing.
I'll go through the numbers when I do the Kickstarter update next. I just think this is so much fun. The great thing is you can back the base game as well. I'll let you know how much that is shortly. I think we've got to take a break.
We do.
And come back, and I will talk about said Kickstarter.
Wonderful.
Very shortly. His name must be...
G'day everyone, Garth here, live from the toilet. I've just thought I'd pause the app I'm playing at the moment to give a quick shout out to all our Patreon backers, because their money makes a huge difference to us. Every single dollar we get, we put back into the show. So far, it's allowed us to go to several conventions this year and also to be able to get enough money to keep creating great content for the show. I also wanted to give a big shout out to every new listener that we've got over the last several months who may not even know we have a Patreon. Now, if you feel like you've got a dollar or more burning a hole in your pocket every month and you just don't know what to do with it, jump on over to Patreon, search for The Dice Men Cometh, and no doubt your money will go to a great cause, which is getting us out there to more conventions. Every dollar we get goes back into the show. So we make zero money out of this. It goes to getting us to conventions, creating content, and making the show as good as it really can be. So look, anyway, I'm finished with my message now. Got to get back to the app. And thanks so much for listening. Boom. That was Beanie by Cat Empire. Pretty amazing Australian band. Saw them not too long ago down in St. David's Park, actually.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, there you go. That was when I was young and with it. Now, you're with the Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Mark, I'm going to play you a little song and see if you recognise what it is. Which, of course, means...
Woo!
That it is your time to shine.
Oh, yeah, baby.
With your Kickstarter update. You going to say anything about it or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah?
Here we go. I'm going to say it soon.
Ooh.
Kickstarter! I have got all the news about Kickstarter, including, as we just discussed, the unfair expansion. Just trying to get the latest figures here for it. So the unfair expansion has launched. It's only... don't even know if it's made it to the end of the second day. And it's already, because it's only, I think, a 17-day campaign.
Yeah, it's a short one, this one.
It's already raised over $150,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's already got over 2,700 backers. That means it's more than 250% funded. Now, if you want to get everything, so the base game and the expansion, including shipping, very low shipping for this. I think it's free shipping to Australia and the US and a couple of other countries. It's only 109 Australian for both, which is just fantastic value.
It is good value.
And if you just want the expansion, it's only about $50 including shipping,
yep.
Which now, is very reasonable.
Now, this counts as an Australian Kickstarter as far as we're concerned, but it is published by Good Games USA, which means that the price is in US dollars when you jump on the Kickstarter page.
Yes, that's right. Even though Good Games Publishing is actually Australian.
Correct.
But because of the American links, it shows up as that. But don't be tricked. As we said, this is a fantastic game. We've played it. We loved it. Check our Facebook page and Instagram. You'll see a few photos of some of the cards. But we highly recommend it. Another game that we highly recommend is... War of Supremacy.
Oh, and Nathan Everett.
This might be familiar because this is actually the second time it's been on Kickstarter.
Yes.
I think it got about halfway through the campaign last time and then Nathan decided he wanted to pull it down, do a few more things. Well, he's gone back on Kickstarter. Again, he's only been there, I think, a day and a half.
Yeah, a day and a half sounds about right.
He's already raised almost the $12,000 he's after. It's just coming up to $11,000. So it's definitely going to fund.
Correct.
It's got 28 days to go. I think he said that if it funds within 48 hours, so he's probably got another 12 or so hours to go, he's going to put a whole new set of cards in there. The Blood faction.
Because this is basically a King of the Hill, one against everybody style card game where you're fighting over territories. We have a review copy, still got it at home, yeah. And we played it a couple of times.
Well, in fact, there's a quote on the Kickstarter page that says, "Some fascinating competitive gameplay with lots of fun and huge variability and replayability. We really enjoyed it," by some Tasmanian-based board game podcast.
Oh, there you go. That's good of them to provide such wonderful feedback. Yeah. No, but the reality is it's a great fun game.
Yes, yes. Beautiful looking.
Yeah, we will always support Australian games for sure. Considering that he's had to, for cost reasons like so many other designers, source art from a whole multitude of places, there's a real consistent art style which makes it all look really, really great. And I think that's a credit to Nathan and Lost Treasure Games. So I'm glad it's going to fund second time round.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
He has done a really great job. Now, a couple more Australian Kickstarters. There's a few sort of funny little ones there at the moment. Okay. So there's Drinkage or Drink Age. I'm not sure. The Tipsy Meadows. It's a role-playing drinking card game by Bo Buckley of Emberstorm Games. Now, yeah, I'm not a huge fan of your drinking games, I must admit. And, you know, people have reinvented them a number of times. They always try to make them a little bit, hey, this is a real game. You just do drinking while you do it. Well, you know what? I drink and I play games, and the two don't have to mix together.
No.
I'm happy to drink while I'm playing a game. But look, hey, it looks okay. It looks nice. There's a lot of nice art there. It's still got 25 days to go. Now, they have only raised about $3,000, and they are going for 40, so maybe a bit ambitious.
Yep.
I guess it's up to everyone what they think about drinking games.
Correct.
You know, look, I don't condone drinking. I've spoken so many times, I do home brewing.
Mm-hmm.
I love to drink my own product.
The last drinking game I played was on a Sunday morning when I still lived in Sydney, which was at least before 2008.
Yeah.
And me and my housemate at the time just played Drink Monopoly, where every really? Time you landed on any of the corners, you would have to have a shot of tequila. And we went through a bottle of tequila. It was a very pleasant way to spend the Sunday.
There you go.
Wouldn't recommend it again.
Another, not even a game, this one. This is a role-playing game for people who want to customize their world without the bloat. It's called Proficiency, and David Moore of Melbourne has put this one together. Now, he's only after $2,000 for this little role-playing system. The whole idea is really that you can play any theme, any world you like.
Yeah.
And there's sort of a base set of rules that you can apply to that. Looks quite clever. As I said, he's made 1,800 of the 2,000 that he's after, and still only 18 days to go. So I actually think this one will fund. If you are into role-playing games, and so I guess specifically if you're not attached to any particular system, you might want to check this out, but we always like to support the Australian Kickstarters.
Well, with only $150 to go and 2.5 weeks to do it, you'd have to think it'll be
That's right. Mark. Now, speaking of things that are absolutely beautiful, Garth.
Well, I'm surprised that you're not having a go at me for these, because this is the same company.
I know.
Anyway, before we get to that, I'll let you say.
So this
something.
Is Moonmare's game with their Terradice, T-A-R-A, which are traditional Japanese architecture-designed dice. And there's 7 dice from a D2, so a coin you can flip, up to a D20. These dice stack up on each other and form a beautiful Japanese pagoda.
They do.
And it's fascinating. Now, they're made of some sort of metal, I don't know, but they're very solid, very chunky, at least that's how they look in the pictures.
They sure do.
It's almost more like spinning tops than dice, where they've got the different facets for the number of numbers on them, and then you sort of spin the dice, and then the little face it lands on, that's the thing. But then you stack them all up, and like the D4 is like the pyramidical
the roof of the
lid
pagoda.
Of the pagoda, and as you go down, all the bits go together, the little D6. Look, I don't know who's going to use this.
Well, at least 357 people are going to do it because, again, it's virtually funded.
Yeah.
It's got less than $1,000 to go. It's going for 29, but yep. virtually 30,000, and it's almost there with 2.5 weeks to go.
Yeah.
How much are these? Because I've deliberately not looked at it for fear of backlash.
So?
Considering that I backed their previous one, Hexaroll Dice.
Hexaroll Dice, that's right.
Which may or may not have been well.
These ones are, it's 53 Australian, including shipping. So at that price, it's really, I guess, for the dice enthusiast, or mm-hmm. perhaps the pagoda enthusiast. If you're maybe playing in a Japanese role-playing world that you were playing using the Proficiency RPG system...
There you go.
This would be absolutely perfect, or maybe a Green Ronin-type system. You would love to use these beautiful dice. So, they look amazing. Check out Terra Dice. And congratulations again, preemptively, I'm sure this is going to fund. So yes. Another Australian successful Kickstarter.
See, my Hexaroll choice wasn't so bad after all.
No. Now another one. Chris McDermott from Melbourne, who has so far had 11 successful Kickstarters. He creates role-playing game content. And what he's got giant fantasy digital RPG maps with giant ships. It's called Shipstarter.
Ooh.
Very clever.
When your love ship starts again.
That's right. And so what they are is maps for role-playing mm-hmm. of heaps and heaps of different ships. And then other bits of maps that go with the ships. Now, again, he puts on very reasonable funding targets for all his Kickstarters. I think he's done more than 20, but he's funded 11 of them so far.
Great.
He's now funded this one because he's only after $1,250. He's already got over $4,000. And obviously this is something that you can either print out or you can get hard copies. Again, very cheap. It's got 7 more days to go, but it's clearly funded and you can pay anything from $5 up for like a single map up to lots more for lots of different
maps.
Yeah,
okay, cool.
So great to see another Australian making a success on Kickstarter. Unlike the other one who I was dying to tell everyone about as an example of how not to do a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
It was called Path of War. When I checked it again today to update my information, it had been cancelled. And this guy was basically saying, I hope to be creating a new type of board game, mixing genres of board game, trading card game, a miniature war game. It's a dream of mine. You can pledge $20 and I'll send you a thank you card. Or you can send $50 and I'll send you an extra big thank you card. You didn't get anything for that money.
No.
This Kickstarter had no pictures, no photos, and on the front was a logo that had in sort of like ghost print underneath, free source logo. So...
And you are not overestimating how little was on the campaign. It must have been 2 to 3 paragraphs.
So you didn't even need to scroll down. It all fitted in one computer screen.
Correct.
And look, good to see that it got taken down. There are a few very helpful comments there about, hey, dude, can we see a bit more about your game? Because it sounds interesting. How about some pictures? How about some rules? How about something?
Yes.
And the next thing, it descended into chaos.
Well, it descended into chaos and swear words on behalf of the creators.
Yes.
And it was, look, it was a clear example of just a person who didn't have the right basis to be doing a Kickstarter and expected money, and a lot of money, because he was going for, what, $50,000?
I think it was $40,000,
some really high amount. But wasn't actually being able to provide anything. So, yeah, it was a shocker. And I'm glad it's been pulled down and tried to look at the creator to see if there'd been any history of other campaigns, and the creator was no longer a member of Kickstarter.
Yeah, and then the other thing was that one of the comments said, oh, by the way, dude, do you know we can see your campaign you cancelled 2 weeks ago? Look, I mean, I'm not making fun of the guy. It's just there's a way to do Kickstarter and there's a way not to do it. Now.
Correct.
This next one, so we've covered all the Australian ones now. This next one we've already talked about, Tim Fowers with Sabotage.
Yep.
You know, he's just about to hit 80,000 Australian dollars. He's just about to hit over 1,000 bankers. I don't know if any bankers have backed it, but about 1,000 backers. Still got 20 days to go. And as we said, it's got the beautiful Ryan Goldsberry art. The quote on here that fascinated me was by Jerry Holkins, who's Tyco from Penny Arcade. Yeah. So he's the not the drawer, he's the writer from Penny Arcade. A postmodern co-op stealth RPG made from the bones of Battleship.
Okay.
When you read that, it's like, how can you not be interested? So, and it's actually a roll and write game. Mm. We mentioned a few of those lately.
Which is a bit of the hotness at the moment,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, as I said, still got 20 days to go. It's a little bit pricey.
For a lot of his games, considering his last games have been Now Boarding and Wokstar, hardback, paperback, and a few of the smaller games like Fugitive, which would be lucky if they were maybe getting to be about the $30 per unit, maybe maybe a smidge higher, but not too much. This is a big jump up. Now, it looks big, but how much is it going to cost us if we back this one?
It's going to cost $94 Australian, including shipping, which is a lot. And I think this is the shipping that kills it a bit. The shipping is like $29.
Well, you better move on quickly, and I don't know whether you're getting to shipping on a Vital Lacerda game, but anyway, just
Yeah, well, that's
on.
The thing. I will mention that one. Escape Plan, which... Another amazing, beautiful Vital Lacerda, Ian O'Toole co-production. That one is almost 1,000% funded. They've got over 650,000.
Yeah.
Still got 14 days to go. Looks absolutely beautiful. Certainly doesn't look like your typical Vital, Ian O'Toole co-production.
Heavy Euro game,
though. But, yeah, it's $106 for the game. And then $29 for the shipping?
Well, the $29 for the shipping 2 days ago was $59 for the shipping to Australia, which I didn't notice when I backed it. So I am a backer.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to pay $30 because getting a Vital Lacerda game with all the massive component upgrades for virtually $130 is fine.
Yeah.
I'm not sold on the game yet, but I am sold on Vital Lacerda and Ian O'Toole and the quality of the componentry.
A couple more quick ones. The Expanse role-playing game. So this one is based on the books, not on the TV series, but it's by Green Ronin Publishing, who've done quite a lot of RPGs. Again, it's 600% funded. There's still 27 days to go, and it's only $27 Australian to get a PDF. We've got Thunderstone Quest Back to the Dungeon, where they're introducing co-op mode, barricades, plus a new quest. Again, it's over 1,000% funded.
Solo mode as well?
Yeah, yeah. You know, heading towards $700,000. Shipping's a bit of a killer on that one. And finally, I'll mention the official Gloomhaven playermats.
Yes.
By Quiver Games. They're amazing quality. But, you know, they've raised over $100,000. It's $120 for four playermats.
Yeah.
Which is not much less than the actual game itself, but they do look beautiful. And I guess if you're going to play 100 scenarios of a game, you might as well do
it. I love how they say it doesn't take up any extra space on the table, which is a load of bollocks. It's a load of garbage, but they do look great.
That's Kickstarter, Garth.
Fantastic, Mark. Well, what an active show for show. Choo, choo, choo.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much, Richie.
Aren't you being Richie? How are you saying Richie when you're being Richie?
Yes. Thank you very much, Bill. Bull. Thank you, Bull.
Oh, my God. Stick to board games. Don't stick to any form of accent because clearly it doesn't end well. So, look, it has been episode 222. Leon, we've missed you. Hope you're feeling better. We are the Dice Men Cometh. We will be back same time next week talking all things board games. And for any eagle-eared listeners, they may find a surprise in the podcast stream in the next week or so. Is that
right?
Yes,
they may do. We'll see if I've got some spare time on my hands.
Anyway, so thank you, Area 52, for your continued support. Thank you, listeners, for listening in. Thank you, Edge Radio, for having us here. And we are out of here. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support The Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon, for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.